Good morning. Court Radio is now in session.
Welcome to Court Radio.
Call 1-800-359-1479.
And the lines are alight.
When you've got legal questions.
Do I have any legal recourse?
What are my rights in this situation?
Is that valid?
And I'm just wondering, what is the statute of limitations?
We've got the answer.
You can whip your pictures out in court and say, liar, liar, pants on fire.
Right. This is Court Radio.
Let me go get the popcorn. This sounds like fun.
And now, here's your host, Dean Weitzman.
Good morning. This is Dean Weitzman, your host for Court Radio. Joined in the studio with my co-host, the one and only David M. Rappaport.
Good morning. Whoa, got a weird sound going on.
That's all right. You're a weird guy.
Sounds muffled and all right. I like it.
It's just
more
your,
compressed.
It's your head that's muffled. Good morning, and we've got Court Radio.
I think it is
Sunday morning. It's September the 22nd today? September 23rd. And
see,
it is...
Whoa, look how...
Yes.
You hear okay. How different I sound now?
Yes.
Wow.
Okay. Sounds great. And it's beautiful outside. We have about 55 degrees. It's going to be a nice day again. And
when I came out of my house, I could see every star in the sky. It was that clear.
Yes.
So it's that usually means it's a beautiful... There you go. That's what was happening.
Yeah.
Kyle, right on the spot with crickets. I like it.
So, folks, you're listening to Court Radio. This is Dean Weitzman joined with David Rappaport to answer your legal questions. If you've got a legal question, we've got a legal answer. 1-800-359-1479. That gets you into the studio where your calls will be taken by our producer, the one and only Monica Peters, who's not, or Larry. Larry or Monica, they're interchangeable. 1-800-359-1479. That gets you in the studio where we'll answer your legal question. David.
Yes.
What's going on in the world today?
Well, you know, I guess you can't get away from, we're hot and heavy in the political realm of, you know, both sides going at each other. Viciously and crazily.
How about that? How about that Republican who is just sabotaging his own
Mitt Romney
campaign? Is that his name, Mitt?
Yeah, you know, I don't.
Mitt made some mistakes this week.
He did, and I like I said, like you just said, I hope he's sabotaging it, but I wouldn't be so sure.
Oh, come on.
Well, look, all of his believers, you talk to anyone who's in favor of Mitt Romney, and they just blow it off like, oh,
That's not what he really said.
Yeah, or he misspoke, but so what? Everyone misspeaks.
They're the revisionists. They rewrite history.
They will
this
not
is a fellow
falter.
Who said. This is a fellow who said that... 47% of America doesn't need to eat or have a roof over their head.
Well, what he said was 47% are dependent on the government, and they're going to vote for Obama because he's the candidate who's trying to make everyone dependent on the government. So he basically disenfranchised half of the country by just saying, you know, you are dependent on the government, you're all victims, and you use the government, which is crazy. That's the Republican mantra, that government is creating dependency, and anyone who's using government benefits.
But there was another thing he did, David.
It because they, you know, want
he,
to.
He didn't. He dropped his tax return, his second year tax return. Mm. Not a lot, just a second year tax return. And the tax return shows that the dude is paying like 13% income tax.
You know, that's old.
We're all paying like at least, you know, 28%, a third, you know. I mean, a big percentage of my money goes to the government.
Yeah, and here's what I love.
But this fat cat's paying 13%.
And here's what I love. His combating argument to you will be, well, look at how much I pay to charity. All of his charitable, all, 99% of it is to Mormon, you know, religious things. And what do religious entities not do in our country? Pay taxes.
Right.
So, yeah, he's giving charitable money.
Hey, folks, did you know that your churches and other religious organizations, once they're deemed a real religion, that they don't pay taxes on any of the money they earn?
Yeah, you know, my platform when I run for president is, you didn't know I was running, did you?
No.
Write me in, people. But
yes.
My platform is that if you just did change that every religious organization would have to pay real estate taxes on the property they own, income taxes on the income they make, we could solve our debt problem. I mean, really, we could literally solve the debt problem and probably all the other problems that we have in our country money-wise.
1-800-359-1479. 1-800-359-1479. You got a question? We got an answer. Oh, and one other thing, folks. When you're listening to Court Radio and the week is going on, you're kind of thinking, hey, I got a question for those guys. You can always go to www.courtradio.com. And find the Court Radio website where we have a ton of good information, and you can also post your questions there, as well as Twitter. You can Twitter us at Twitter at Court Radio, and we'll answer your questions as soon as you Twitter them. In fact, you'll get instantaneous access.
As soon as you tweet them, I think is the proper vernacular.
Past tense of twit.
Yeah, right. Be a twit and tweet.
Okay. And you'll get an answer right away. Okay? That's my promise to you. All right, let's talk to Lamont, who's been patiently holding in South Philly. Good morning, Lamont, and welcome to Court Radio.
Yeah, good morning. How you doing?
All right. I'm well, thank you. You have a question for us to start the show off?
Yes, sir. My question is that as far as a cheating spouse, can abandonment. Is there an abandonment rule in Philadelphia, and can a spouse get alimony from a cheating spouse in Philadelphia?
Okay. Well, first of all, those laws and rules are statewide. So Philadelphia doesn't have their own rules on abandonment or on domestic relations cases, but it is for the entire Commonwealth. Secondly, alimony is generally based on the length of the marriage, whether one spouse has a substantially higher earning capacity than the other spouse, and not based on fault. And so abandonment doesn't play a role. Except that if you have a 20-year marriage, yes, but yes. But 18 years of it you were abandoned, then when the one spouse comes in to get alimony, they can't claim that they had a 20-year marriage. They had a 2-year marriage and 18 years of abandonment. So it may have some effect on your alimony or your spousal support. It may. But that's only to the extent that it goes to the length of the marriage, but not because somebody's at fault and they need to be punished. And one of the punishments is going to be that we're going to make them pay spousal support. Okay?
Okay. So if the person is making more than the other spouse, and the other spouse decided to just just leave a household and leave the spouse with all the bills, and the spouse is not making that much, the other spouse is not making as much, can that spouse be taken to court?
Yes. Generally, you can, if there's a large disparity between the spouse's earnings, the lower earning spouse is entitled to spousal support at approximately 1 year of spousal support for every 3 years of marriage. But you should consult with an attorney and sit down and discuss your individual claims or cases, as the case may be. We're giving you kind of general information, but you need to sit down with an attorney. And, of course, on domestic relations matters, you're always going to pay hourly for the attorney's time. All right. Have a great Sunday. Thanks for calling Court Radio.
Thank you.
All right. All right, there we go. Got the first caller out of the way, and I think we
might ask two questions, but
folks, we have a rule here at Court Radio. David just reminded me, you get one question and one question only. We'll have to cut you off after that, so that we have an opportunity to get to everybody or as many people as we can. 1-800-359-1479. 1-800-359-1479. David, the NHL, the National Hockey League, is shut out.
My beloved hockey has locked out once again.
I'm just curious, the whole lockout phenomenon from a legal perspective, how does that work?
Well, the how does it work is the owners basically have locked out the players from playing.
So they said you can't come and show up and play?
Correct. Because they're not agreeing on a new contract. They're not agreeing on the way the money's being split, that kind of stuff. So they're locked out from playing. It's technically, you know, obviously, what are they going to do? They're not going to recreate the NHL and get all new players. So it's almost a mutual type thing. You know, the players know if we don't agree, the union says if we don't agree, obviously, it's going to be a lockout because the season won't be able to start. But the owners pretty much just say, we're locking you out. They like to be the, they like to control things, you know what I mean? Which is part of the issue, I think. But so it's all about money. Everything's about money.
They're not coming to play, and we're not having hockey in Philadelphia for the time being.
Yep.
All right, folks, you're going to have to turn to the NFL, and the National Football League and is playing hard and playing fast. The Eagles are facing the Arizona, Cardinals. That's right. And Arizona and the Eagles kick off around 4:30 today, 4:15, something like that.
And they're both 2-0, I believe, yeah.
Yeah. So we're going to see somebody's going to break that tie.
Someone will be a loser and someone will be a winner. Hopefully.
Somebody's going to be 3-0, and we expect it to be the Birds.
Absolutely.
Although Michael Vick has been, I don't know, he's been kind of a slow starter, you know? He needs a little help.
He's also been pummeled. Yeah. Every single game. I'm surprised he's still able to walk.
Well,
he's
we
been
just
lucky.
Yeah, we need him for 14 more games. That's all.
You don't care about after that.
Not really. No. I mean, you know, he's getting $100 million. I mean, we expect him to get beat up a little bit. Come on.
Do we?
You want to pay me $100 million? I'll take some hits.
Yeah, right. Okay? Sure. Sure. I'm sure he feels that way.
I'll let Kyle hit me.
Do you want to do a quick? Want me to pose the quick question for the My Philly Lawyer pack?
Quick. Okay. We're moving on to the hot button topic.
We talked about the NHL. When was the first time in NHL history that there was a lockout?
There you go.
Not this one, but when was the first one?
So this is a decidedly, distinctly sports kind of question.
Yeah. Sports.
So you've got to be into sports to answer this question, and the answer is going to be some year. What year did the NHL get locked out for
the first time? Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, call in with your personal injury questions as well. Maybe you can throw in that answer. Or just call with the answer. You'll get a pack.
All right. And in the pack comes a My Philly Lawyer hat.
Okay.
A very expensive My Philly Lawyer Parker pen and other things.
Other goodies.
Yes.
Okay.
It's very valuable.
Nice.
Yeah. It's a numbered pack, a numbered edition, hand signed by Dean Weitzman himself.
I think you gave me one of those Parker pens a little while ago. That was,
yes.
I don't know if I still have it.
That was your bar mitzvah present. All right. We got a guest on the line who's joining us from down in the Maryland and Washington area. He's an attorney. His name is Bruce Plaxton, and Bruce is handling a case right now that is of interest to everybody in
the country.
But most importantly, it's of interest to those folks who are bound by a archaic law. The law is the law of contributory negligence.
150 years that law has been in existence, apparently. That's what the news says.
There you go. Well, we believe the news.
Yes.
We make the news.
But it's very archaic. What is it?
Contributory negligence says that if you're involved in an accident and you're any percentage at fault as the victim, okay, if you've contributed to your injuries in any way, shape, or form, even one scintilla, 1%.
What happens?
You get nothing. Zero, zilch, nada. So, for instance, you're going through an intersection. The light's green. You look carefully and you head through the intersection. When you're involved in an intersectional collision, some lunatic is coming through a red light at a high rate of speed and he clips you at the rear of your car. If the jury or judge were to find that you were 1% at fault for failing to drive a little more slowly or failing to keep a proper lookout, and the other car were 99% at fault in Maryland, Washington, and several other jurisdictions around the country, you get zip. Now,
wow.
In Pennsylvania, yeah. What happens? It's that percentage of fault is reducing your award. So let's see what's going on down there, because we thought this would never change. We got Bruce Plaxton on the line. Bruce, welcome to Court Radio.
Good morning, Dean. I've been listening to your show this morning and enjoying it.
Thank you. Thank you very much. We have greetings from Larry Greenberg and...
Mandeep.
Yeah, Chopra. And Mandeep. The fellas... Our fellas in Baltimore and in Maryland...
They made us say their names.
Yeah. I think they're listening, too.
Do you have to say their name every show?
No, when you're...
Yeah, we're under contract. We're under contract, Bruce, to say their name. If we don't say their name, there's going to be some serious penalties. And we get a fine by the FAA, too.
Can I get one of those hats you were just telling everyone about?
Absolutely. We're gonna send you a whole My Philly Lawyer pack.
Wait a minute. Do you know the answer? If you know the answer to the question, you can get a hat.
Okay.
Bruce, so like we thought this law would never change. Tell us a little bit about your case that has brought this law before the court.
Kyle Coleman was a 20-year-old volunteer assistant coach at a soccer little league locally here in Howard County. And he goes to a public school where they have a soccer goal on the field with no net. And it's not anchored. There's no sandbags. There's nothing. And what people around the country may not understand is that soccer goals, unanchored soccer goals, injure or kill kids like all the time. It's more injuries from soccer goals tipping over than football or basketball or baseball. I didn't know this until I got involved with this case. That's such a dangerous thing because they're heavy goals, and if they're not put on the field right, they'll fall over and they'll crush little kids. And Kyle is a small man, and he kicked the ball through this goal, and he grabbed, as he was going to retrieve the ball, he grabbed the crossbar, kind of pulled himself up, maybe did like a little chin up and pulled the whole thing down and crushed his face. The jury in Howard County found that the Soccer Association was negligent for not warning, not training, and not anchoring this goal properly, but that Kyle also contributed by improperly using the equipment. They argued that you're not supposed to hang on the goal, even though we put in evidence that this happens all the time. It's routine. Kids hang on goals. Adults hang on goals. Professional soccer players grab the goals, and that's really the case. And our Court of Appeals, which is what we call our Supreme Court or our highest appellate court, took cert and decided to look at it for the first time in 30 years.
Why is that?
Why do you think they decided to look at it? Why now?
I think they're ready. I think Dean described it. It's archaic. It's old. And it's not just the law of Maryland since 1847. It was the law of all 50 states at one time.
Right.
And 46 states have abandoned it. Most of them, the early part of the last century, most of them 100 years, 50 to 100 years ago. And there's only four states in the District of Columbia that remain. And we think they're ready for a change.
See, that's
why I asked the court to look at it.
This brings up an interesting issue that we lawyers face who represent people in that, you know, in order to effectuate change in the law, you really almost need to, I hate to say wait, but wait for the right case and the right set of facts to be able to take it to the court to do the right thing and change the law for everybody. And that's sort of what happened here. You have the right case, it sounds to me, the right kind of facts and the right time to do it.
Well, actually, I think, Bruce, you're a very brave man because
Yeah. You
had to know when you took this case to court there was a substantial likelihood that your client might be found somewhat comparatively or contributorily negligent.
Yes, that's why I asked. One of the, it's not so easy to get the case up on appeal.
Right.
We had to ask for comparative instruction. We had to ask for comparative jury instruction as well as a comparative verdict sheet. And the judge looked at me, you know, like I was crazy. That's not the law of the land, but it had to be. We had to preserve the appeal very carefully, and I almost did not take the case. It was brought to me by another attorney, and I knew it was a very difficult case. And quite frankly, I didn't take it with the idea of changing the law. I took it with the idea that the Soccer Association would probably look at it, not want to go to court, and offer me a compromise settlement.
Right.
But when they didn't, it looked like the only way to win this would be to change the law.
Well, kudos to you for pursuing it further, you know.
Did the jury actually apportion the fault?
No, they never do.
Okay.
It's not the law, so there's no reason. What happens is a verdict sheet in Maryland just reads, was the defendant negligent, yes or no? Was the plaintiff negligent, yes or no? I mean, sometimes there's a question in between that says, was the defendant's negligence the proximate cause of the injuries? But then it says, was the plaintiff negligent at all, yes or no? And if the answer is yes, the verdict sheet reads, stop here.
Right, right, right. At all. That's the key. Was the plaintiff negligent at all?
Oh, that's a tough thing to overcome, I'll tell you.
Yeah. And so you'll end up, it's just for our listeners' benefit, you'll end up having to retry this case in order to determine the fault of the plaintiff. If the law is overturned, there's still a fact that has to be determined, and that is, what is the respective fault of each of the parties?
Correct. That's exactly right. If our Court of Appeals overturns the case, I'll get to retry the case.
Well, not only that, it depends on, like in Pennsylvania, if you're more than 50% at fault, then you get nothing. So it depends on, and some states are like that and some are not. So right. It really depends on how they change the law, if they change it too. You know,
exactly.
What happens
our court has not tipped their hand at all in terms of that. In fact, some of the questions at the oral argument were, you know, what system should we adopt? A pure comparative?
Right.
That's 50% or more or 50% or less. There's several models of comparative negligence that they would have to decide what Maryland would adopt if we adopt it.
Did you make an argument for one type of way to do it?
We argued for pure.
Okay.
Yeah, wouldn't that be something? just again, for the sake of our listeners, let me explain to you that a pure comparative negligence state doesn't forbid the plaintiff from pursuing his claim regardless of his percentage at fault. If a plaintiff has a case worth $1,000 and he is 90% negligent in causing his own injury and the defendant only 10%, the plaintiff can pursue his claim, and that $1,000 claim is reduced by the plaintiff's negligence, 90% or $900 in the case of a $1,000 claim, and he would be awarded $100 by the defendant. In Pennsylvania, we follow a different rule. Our rule is that if the plaintiff is 51%, anything over 50%, and the plaintiff gets zero. If he's 50% or less, his claim will be reduced by that amount. So in the case of a $1,000 claim, if he's 50% at fault or she's 50% at fault, she or he would get $500 from the defendant. But if the plaintiff is 51% at fault, they don't get $490. They get nothing, zero. Pure negligence, they would get the $490 if they were 51% at fault. And I think it would be apropos for Maryland, and obviously it's to the plaintiff's advantage, to get a pure negligence state, because then any case is a case the defendants will have to pay what percentage of damages they caused, which is, I think, a fair thing as a plaintiff's attorney.
Yeah, well, it doesn't make sense to put all the burden on the victim. I mean, it's the one person who shouldn't bear all the burden would be the victim, you would think.
Absolutely.
But
the interesting thing is there are two parties, Bruce, who oppose changing the law. Tell us who they are.
There were many.
Give us the two biggest parties.
The two biggies.
Well, I mean, you've got the Chamber of Commerce.
Ba-boom.
You have, I mean, the local governments had it. You had the business community.
How the insurance companies feel about it.
The insurance companies are against it, which I don't understand, because I always tell my insurance, I do a lot of grassroots lobbying on behalf of the trial lawyers.
Uh-huh.
I'm a past president of the state organization.
Okay.
And I say, no matter what system we adopt, you're going to make money because you set the rates.
Right.
You set the premiums. What do you care what it is? You make money in the other 46 states.
That's true.
I'm not sure which two groups you're talking about.
Well, you got one. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce. You know, they're supposed, you would think, like the Chamber of Commerce, they're supposed to help people, you know, interact with business.
I got a funny argument they made.
What was that?
It will endanger Maryland's business community, because once we go to comparative, we lose our business advantage and businesses will flee the state.
Well, where are they going? To the other, right. Other 46 states?
No, to the three that'll be left, I guess.
Oh, yeah, that's right. They'll find the three.
Who are those three that'll be left?
We need to kill and maim people and not be responsible for it. Damn, we got to get out of here now.
Virginia, North Carolina, and Alabama would then have all the business in the country.
Yeah. Right. Everything
as well as the District of Columbia.
Anytime a state is screwed up, it's always Alabama that's the answer. Okay. Well, listen, I hear the banjos playing now. Bruce, in addition to the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, you have the American Medical Association.
Of course. Yeah.
The AMA, the doctors.
Medical malpractice. Right. Bing, bam, boom.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep. They've been writing articles in their national publications, et cetera, against this case.
Yeah. So, well, I hope that
I guess all the Maryland doctors will be moving to Philly to take advantage of your laws because...
50%, right?
Yeah, well, Bruce, I certainly wish you the best of luck with this case. If you win, I hope you don't need a colonoscopy anytime soon. You might find it difficult.
You have to come here.
Yeah.
I'll come back on your show. Maybe I could win one of the prizes.
Bruce, take care. Thanks for calling into Court Radio. Good luck with that. Call us back and let us know how you make out, sir.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks for your interest in our case.
All right. Be well.
Bye.
Take care.
Folks, if you're listening to Court Radio, we were talking to Bruce Plaxton, who was describing a case down in Maryland that's going to change, cutting edge, going to change the law for Maryland and hopefully for the last remaining states who still have this archaic law of contributory negligence. If you're even 1% at fault in causing your loss, you get zero, zilch, zip, nada. We are almost at the break for Court Radio. We have got a couple listeners on the line. We've got a few more who are calling in. We'll take those calls when we get back. Folks, if you're listening to Court Radio, you can reach David Nye with your personal injury or legal question at 1-800-359-1479. 1-800-359-1479. And now we're going to go to a station break, and we'll be right back.
Your child broke a window, but you taught them to be responsible for their mistakes. They do the right thing. Doing the right thing isn't what insurance companies do best. I'm Dean Weitzman of My Philly Lawyer. Call us at 215-227-2727. Doing the right thing means more than saying I'm sorry. It means paying for the injuries your mistake has caused by making insurance companies pay. Call My Philly Lawyer at 215-227-2727. My Philly Lawyer, when winning matters most.
If you've been injured, the road to recovery can seem long. At United Therapy Centers, we're here to help. Call us 877-510-7764. With leading-edge technology and our team approach, we provide the highest level of patient care with a pain management program developed just for you. If you've been injured, we can help. Call United Therapy Centers toll-free 877-510-7764. United Therapy Centers, get on the road to recovery.
Are you in a financial legal squeeze? Unable to work because of an accident with your legal case still not settled? Lawsuit Funding Solutions can help you pay the bills while you wait. If you have a pending lawsuit, call 877-697-7352. It can take time for a lawsuit to settle. Lawsuit Funding Solutions is here to help you get back on track. And you won't owe them a thing if your case doesn't settle or you don't receive a judgment. Get out of the squeeze today. Call 877-697-7352.
If you've been injured on the job and are entitled to workers' comp, you need someone fighting for you from the start. Call Jeffrey Gross, attorney at law. Don't rely on your employer or insurance company to get it right. Call 215-512-1500. If you're entitled to workers' comp or it's being challenged, Jeffrey Gross can help get the money you deserve, and he won't get paid unless you get paid. Call 215-512-1500. Jeffrey Gross, attorney at law, representing Pennsylvania's injured workers for more than 20 years.
Need more legal answers? Here's more Court Radio with your host, Dean Weitzman.
All right, David.
All right, we are back.
We're back.
Interesting case, real interesting.
Yeah, folks, if you're just beginning to listen to Court Radio, you know this is the place where you can get your legal questions answered 24/7. During the week, if you call me at 225-227-2727, you know, the regular number at the office, we'll try to help you out. 1-800-359-1479 on Sunday mornings gets you into the Court Radio show where you can be a star asking your legal question. Today's hot button topic, as we often have, is contributory negligence. What is that, you say? That's the legal proposition that when you're when you've caused your injury by any percentage, even 1%, you get nothing from the primary culpable party. Somebody causes you an injury, the jury finds that you caused, you contributed to your injury in any way, shape, or form, even 1%, even as little as 1%. The other 99% was caused by the defendant. The defendant gets a free ride, in essence.
And that's why the doctors are against, or the medical associations against it, and the Chamber of Commerce, because they want to be able to do those things, not purposely, but accidents happen.
Purposely.
Well, even purposely,
well,
maybe.
Let me explain how that would work on a Med-Mal case. How about this? Yeah. You go to the doctor. The doctor is does some procedure incorrectly and causes you to have a serious problem. Now, you have this problem, and you wait a week to get back to the doctor, and you call him back, and you say, you know, I've had this problem for a week, and what can you do? And you come back in. And the doctor says, this problem is now permanent. You have a permanent problem. If you had called me right away, you wouldn't have this permanent problem. Even though I made a mistake, I could have fixed it if you would have called me right away. Well, the guy says, I didn't know to call you right away. I thought it was going to get better. The jury finds that that victim is 1% at fault because he didn't call the doctor sooner, and maybe he should have. But the doctor was 99% at fault for causing the problem in the first place. In that instance, in Maryland, the doctor does not have to contribute or does not have to pay anything for his mistake.
Scot-free.
Scot-free.
So, of course, they love that because they can make mistakes and not have to be responsible for them as long as they can show, and they'll argue. Look, even in Pennsylvania now where we don't have this law, they argue all the way to trial. Even if they're at fault, just to argue and to delay. So imagine in Maryland, they're always going to make the argument that there's some fault. Why not take that chance? Go to a jury. The jury finds 1%, like you said, and they're off scot-free.
I want to know how regular people feel about this question. So we went to the street to talk to the peeps to see how they felt about this question. Go ahead, Kyle. Sorry.
Should Maryland's 150-year-old law prohibit persons partially responsible for their injuries from receiving a payout? Let's take it to the peeps on the street to hear what you have to say.
John from Texas, I think that the person's percentage of negligence should be offset against any damages they should get. So if they contributed 10% by touching or adding to the problem, the recovery should be less at 10%.
I'm Susan from D.C., and I really think you should get paid if it's not your fault.
My name is Diana. I'm from Annapolis, Maryland. And I think that the law sounds unjust, and I hope they overturn it. And I hope that the law will not have this sort of exception for someone that has a minor role in something that hurts them that's really caused by someone else.
This is Monica Peters taking it to the peeps on the street. Now back to the studio with Court Radio with Dean Weitzman.
Yes, David.
Mayor Dean, interestingly, this plays somewhat, not the same thing, but in Pennsylvania, what happened with our joint and several liability. They tried and succeeded, they being the powers that be now, the Republican regime in Pennsylvania, Corbett and his cronies, getting rid of what we had, which was multiple defendants being responsible for your injury. If one of them has, quote unquote, a deep pocket, the other one doesn't, the defendant who has the deep pocket has to pay your damages fully and then let them go after the other defendant to try and get the rest of their money back or their percentage back.
Right.
They got rid of that law. So now you can only get from the percentage from the one company or one defendant who has assets, and then you have to go trying as the victim, trying to run around and find the rest of your money or compensation from the other responsible party. You know, same kind of issue.
It is.
Putting it on the victim.
The problem is, or the issue is, little by little, big business and insurance companies are whittling away
eroding,
your rights.
Yep. Eroding your rights.
There you go. All right, let's talk to Nancy from Sicklerville, New Jersey, on a car accident insurance question. Hi, Nancy, and welcome to Court Radio.
Thank you.
What's your question?
My question is, I was in an accident on the 42 freeway, and another truck or something dropped a bin on the highway, and I hit it. Now, my insurance company is disavowing the claim because they say it wasn't another car involved, and it had to be a car involved to drop this bin. But the police couldn't find the car or anything. And my attorney was, like, pursuing the case under the uninsured motorist thing, but now they've disavowed my claim.
Okay, well, it's an interesting question, and in fact, not surprisingly, because Dean Weitzman handles a gazillion issues and cases, I handled the exact same case a number of years ago in Pennsylvania, and we won. That should come as no surprise because
you handled it.
I handled it. No, but this is what happened, and the facts are going to be a little bit different than your case, I think, but you can tell me when I'm done. My people actually were driving down the highway when a truck in front of them that had these bins on it, as you said, one of the bins got loose, came flying out, fell onto the highway. My people swerved and hit the bin and then ultimately lost control and hit a guardrail. And my client sustained some serious injuries. She had fractures. She was a passenger in the car, I believe. The distinct difference between the scenario I just painted and yours that I heard was my people saw that the bin came from a truck that they were unable to identify. The truck took off, never stopped, abandoned them on the highway, and you know, just ran away. They weren't able to identify it. It was an unidentified vehicle, and therefore, I was able to successfully, although I will tell you that the evil insurance company didn't agree with me, and they fought us all the way to court. We had to try that case, but we were successful in proving that that was an automobile accident and a phantom vehicle. You sounded like you were concluding, well, it had to be that. It couldn't be anything else. And that's not entirely true. I mean, some little kid could come running onto the highway and drop a trash can and run away from the highway and think he was, you know, doing something that was cool. So in my case, my people actually saw it come off of a truck, a moving vehicle, and the truck left. Am I wrong, or did you actually see it come out of a vehicle, Nancy?
No, I didn't. It was in the nighttime. It was raining very hard, and I couldn't see the bin until I was almost, you know, on it.
Yeah.
You see, Dean, but
trying to stop, but it was too late.
Yeah.
My issue, though, aren't most insurance policies, they will pay for an accident if you're in the maintenance or use of your automobile. She's obviously using her automobile properly, driving on the highway. What if she went into a huge pothole?
No, they'll pay if Nancy was injured. I bet you, Nancy, your medical bills were paid from that accident, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, so far they're being paid. They want me to go see one of their doctors.
Of course.
Okay, right. Well, that's the maintenance and use. That's you had spinal cord surgery, yeah. And that's Nancy.
Yeah.
Nancy was in the use of her automobile, and
right. So
therefore she was going to get her medical benefits. But now the uninsured motorist statute or clause in the insurance policy
collision.
Is different. There needs to be an automobile accident caused by an uninsured motorist. Nancy, you can't prove there was an uninsured motorist involved in your case, and that's the distinct problem you have. If you had seen it coming from a vehicle that took off, I think you're a winner. But because you didn't, I think you're a loser, unfortunately. Thanks, Nancy, for calling Court Radio, and have a great Sunday.
Harsh.
Yeah,
harsh. Dean.
Listen.
Due to the severity of the injuries, I think it should be pursued as it is being. And if I were her attorney, I'd be taking it to court.
Yeah, okay.
And arguing it.
There you go. David from Northeast Philly.
I wouldn't
Philly's.
Be calling her a loser.
Well, she was. Nancy, sorry, baby. I call it the way it is.
I'm not in total agreement with that.
Dave from Northeast Philly's got an answer to Big Dave's trivia question.
Go ahead, Dave.
From Northeast, what's the answer?
Hey. Good morning. I think it was
04, 09. 04, 05.
I knew you were going to go there, brother, but you're wrong. That was a lockout. Yes, you are correct. That was not the first lockout.
Am I wrong?
You are.
It is.
That was a lockout, but wasn't the first one.
Sorry, Dave.
I tricked you.
Keep on trying. We'll let you call back again, but that was the incorrect answer. All right. There's David from Northeast Phillies.
Good try, though. It was a lockout. He was right about that.
He's crying in his Cheerios right now because David.
No hat.
Yeah.
No hat from Dean.
No Parker pen. Folks, if you're listening to Court Radio, it's David and I who are answering your legal questions. If you've got them, you got to call us at 1-800-359-1479. If you call after the show, you can always reach us 24/7. That's right. You got it, 24/7 at 215-227-2727. That's the number in all of Philadelphia for your legal issues. If you've got legal issues, you've got personal injury questions, you've got a case you think you have, you have a medical malpractice or a birth injury case, we're there for you. All you have to do is call us at 215-227-2727. We've been talking about comparative negligence, contributory negligence. You think, you know, you're waking up Sunday morning thinking, what's that? Well, the real short answer is you're involved in an accident, sustained horrific injuries, and a jury ultimately finds the defendant, the wrongdoer, the culprit, to be 99% at fault. And you, the victim, to be 1% at fault. Right now in Pennsylvania, you get 99% of your damage, as that seems fair. In certain jurisdictions, in particular in Maryland, you get nothing, zero, if you're even 1% at fault.
What do you say? The other ones are Virginia, Alabama.
And North Carolina.
And North Carolina.
Yeah.
Anyway, not surprising, folks, the southern states.
Yeah. At the bellwether hearing coming up, we're going to find out if Maryland joins the other 46 states as being slightly more in favor of victims. Let's talk to Michelle from Delaware, who, A, has an answer to the trivia question, and we're going to allow her a question because she's going to give us an answer and a question. Okay, Michelle, give it up. What's the answer?
The answer, I believe, is 1992.
Ooh, no.
Close.
No?
No.
Oh.
Yeah, sorry, Michelle.
Now, wait, I will say, 92, you're close. 92 was a strike, okay?
Okay.
That was the first strike in NHL history, but we're talking about a lockout, a little different than a strike.
All right.
But you know that was good. That was pretty, that was close. Dean, I can see shaking his head.
Michelle, listen,
Dean's
I'm a fair man, and I have to say that I'm, as the judge of Court Radio, I say you're our winner today.
Wait. You asked me to.
Oh, thank you.
You asked me to define a lockout, and I defined a lockout. And now you're going.
I'm sorry.
All right, Michelle. Look,
listen. I will find you in contempt of court, Mr. Rappaport. Mm. So I would suggest you just close your little.
I think you should give her a gift, but also have someone call in with the correct answer and give them a gift.
You know what happens when you suggest something to a judge?
Yeah.
Yeah. How often are you successful when you suggest something? All right, Michelle, you've got a car accident question. What's your question, dear?
My question is my daughter was riding a bike here in Delaware and was hit by an automobile. An ambulance was called. She was taken to the hospital and issues addressed. She's still having some physical problems because of the accident. But the thing was, she was cited. She was given a ticket after the accident. One was for being under the age of 18 without a helmet. And the other one was for riding on the wrong side of the street. We went to court for the citations, and they were thrown out.
Okay. How old is your daughter?
My question is, do we have... I'm sorry?
How old, Michelle, is your daughter?
She is 17.
Okay. Go ahead. Your question is?
My question is, do we have a leg to stand on as far as pursuing something to get these medical bills paid? They're like coming in $5,000 for this one, $2,000 for that one, the ambulance bill, the emergency room. I just, you know.
Okay.
And, here, and plus the fact that, I'm sorry?
Do you own an automobile?
Yes, I do.
And you have auto insurance?
Yes.
Okay. It is my belief, and I need to check this out to be absolutely certain. Okay, so you can feel free to, you can feel free to give me a call during the week at 215-227-2727. But let me tell you that in Pennsylvania, and I believe it's the same in Delaware, a bicyclist is treated as a pedestrian. When a pedestrian is involved in an automobile accident, you know, struck by an auto, their medical bills are paid by their auto insurance in their household. And so it is my belief that your daughter's medical bills should be appropriately addressed by your auto insurance carrier.
Okay.
And but I know that that's the case in Pennsylvania. I know that that's the case in New Jersey. I believe it's the case as well in Delaware. But let me check that out for you during the week. And you can call us at the office at 215-227-2727.
Okay, I'll do that. Thank you.
I want you to stay on the line, Michelle, because we're going to get your address as well so we can get you that My Philly Lawyer Court, Court Radio Pack of the Week, okay?
All righty.
Just stand by and the producer will take your information. All right, so, you know.
There's another issue with that, though. If it is like you said and there's not enough money to cover all the medical bills, I still think there's the ability to go. She can go after the car. Well, even though those tickets were issued, doesn't mean that she was totally at fault.
No, and it plays into our topic for today.
It does.
Because let's say Michelle's daughter is determined to be 50% at fault in that accident.
Right.
She's driving on the wrong side of the street.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's possible. In Pennsylvania, bicycle traffic has to drive in the same direction as regular traffic. And so if you're not driving, if you're opposing traffic, and that somehow contributed to the loss, you might be at fault, or you may be some percentage at fault. In Pennsylvania, if Michelle's daughter is 50% at fault, but she has a case that's worth $100,000, the wrongdoer is still going to have to pay her $50,000. And that's the same in Delaware as well.
Right.
So, yes, she may be entitled. Maybe. We'd have to know the facts.
Sure.
May be entitled. The other thing, and the reason I'd asked her how old her daughter was, is because there's another law about negligence. And that is, in Pennsylvania, there's a rule that says if you're 7 years old or younger, you can't be negligent. Cannot be negligent. No matter what you do. And so if the wrongdoer is any percentage at fault, they're going to be 100% at fault. Kind of, you know, it's a default rule. After seven, it kind of gradually phases in until about 14, at which point you can be fully negligent. So I'm happy to say, Kyle, you're now able to be fully negligent.
And you are.
Yes. Often.
On a regular basis.
Right.
Yeah.
all right. So anyway, let's take another call. Let's talk to Kevin from Melrose Park, who's been patient on the line. Hey, how are you, Kevin? And welcome to Court Radio. Oh, Kevin.
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 Wake up.
All right.
Can't even wake him up.
We can't wake him up. Sorry, Kevin.
It's catatonic.
Yeah, he's. All right, let's talk to Rob from South Philly. Hello, Rob, and welcome to Court Radio.
How you doing?
All right. Welcome. Welcome.
Yes.
What's your question, Rob?
I was going to ask you about a defamation of character question.
Go all for right. it.
All right. Now, my mom is a foster parent. She's been a foster parent for 20-odd years. Excuse me. And the school that the kids go to, they're mentally challenged. Now, for 3 years straight, they wouldn't file false reports to the DHS. The first year, they said, she said my mom was, they was malnutrition. She wasn't feeding them. The second year, she abused them. Now this year, she filed a claim saying she neglects them. And every year, the DHS people come out there as a different DHS worker, and it's deemed nothing's wrong with the kids, and we take them to the doctor. The doctor say they're not malnourished, and I guess it's starting to go like be an ongoing thing with this principal. And the principal says to my mom one day, "Oh, you just mad because I called DHS on you?" Is that like a defamation of character?
Well, it might be.
Well, I think it's more like of a harassment type thing, and you know, well, I don't know about defamation unless it's publicized to the community and she suffers in some way, well, financially because
yeah.
Of it.
Well, and it sounds like
I was figuring because like every year it's just like ongoing with this principal, and like, and then my mom tries to talk to her. We even went as far as to the school board to even try to get the kids transferred out of the school, but they gave us a runaround.
Let me ask you.
We had to wind up putting the kids right back into the same school.
Let me ask you a question. Is the principal a Philadelphia school employee?
Yes, she is.
Okay. Well, we have something called a Governmental Immunities Act. In other words, there's a statute, has been forever, that you can't sue the government and
right.
And their agents, except for limited specific exceptions. For instance, if a government employee is driving a vehicle, there's the motor vehicle exception. You can sue a government employee. You can sue a government employee for their negligence while operating a motor vehicle. There are a number of specific exceptions. I don't believe that this, as you describe it, slander or libel, is one of the enumerated exceptions.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
Okay.
However, I'll say this much. It's possible that you could get around that law by filing a federal civil rights violation. And I'm not suggesting to you that the facts as you describe them would actually be a federal civil rights violation. But all I'm saying to you is that sometimes you can get around the governmental immunities statute by claiming a violation of the United States Constitution, and you can allege a civil rights violation if one exists. I'm not sure in this instance that one would exist, but I just lay that out there as a possibility. Otherwise,
I think administratively this would have to be handled. Really, you just have to go to the higher ups, like you did the school board. Keep hassling them to do something and show them that this is ridiculous.
Well, yeah, the key here is to document and demonstrate that there is no bona fide basis upon which the school administrator had a reason to make these allegations. That the only reason she was making these allegations was to harass and damage your mother's reputation. And that's a tall order.
The thing of it is, I don't know. I keep trying to figure out whether, because my mom is African American, the principal is a white lady, and it's ongoing. Like, it's so much pressure on my mom. Like, but being as though the kids they need the life skills, and the school board didn't transfer them to the other school, it's really difficult.
Yeah, no, it sounds
like it's stressful. Real stressful to my mom on a regular basis.
And she keeps doing it, which is, a blessing that she's not given up. But I'm not sure legally that she has a leg to stand on unless you can establish, like I said, that there really is no basis in fact whatsoever, but it really is merely done to harass and damage mom. But thanks for calling Court Radio and have a great Sunday.
Thank you very much.
All right. You know, sometimes, David, we don't have a good legal remedy.
Yeah,
unfortunately. And, you know, sometimes that's what you have to tell folks.
Yeah.
You know?
The law doesn't handle everything.
No. Sometimes you just have to, grin and bear it.
Well, yeah, I think there's sources you can go to try and, you know, give back the harassment and not take it, but, you know, it doesn't involve going to court. It involves just picking people's ears and,
yeah,
you know, making a nuisance of yourself, sort of, in making complaints.
Right. And, you know, that's, as you said, you hit the nail on the head. They need to go to the school district administration with their complaints and lay out their case, make their case to the school district. All right. 1-800-359-1479. David Nyer here for a few more minutes to answer your legal questions. And then thereafter, you can reach us at www.myphillylawyer.com during the week. MyPhillyLawyer.com has a ton of great information on the website. We're constantly updating it and adding to it. And if you ever have a legal question, you should always go there first and explore the wealth of information at MyPhillyLawyer.com. And if that doesn't work for you, you can always call us at the office 24/7, 215-227-2727. Let's talk to Ray from Reading, Pennsylvania. Good morning, Ray, and welcome to Court Radio.
Good morning, sir.
What's your question?
Question is, I was laid off. I was terminated for breaking a rule that I did not even know about. I wasn't even informed.
Okay, and the question is, can they do that, I suppose?
Yes.
All right. You're from Reading. I'm assuming that you're employed in Pennsylvania?
Yes.
All right. Pennsylvania is a harsh little state when it comes to this, but it's an at-will state, which means that you can be terminated for any reason at all, even a bad reason, even no reason. And they don't have to give you anything. They can just can you. And there's certain exceptions to that. You know, if you're a member of a union, you've got a union contract, obviously they have to adhere to the contract. If you personally have a contract with your employer, they have to adhere to the contract. And the courts have determined that a contract could be deemed to be your personnel handbook. So if you have an employee personnel handbook and it lays out certain, gives you certain rights in that handbook, or foists upon your employer certain procedures that they've agreed to follow in terminating employees, and they didn't follow those procedures, then I'd say, yes, you have a case. But if they did follow the procedures, if there is no personnel handbook, and if they were just boneheads who let you go for a bad reason and not for any really strong fault on your part, I'd say you're without a claim. Unfortunately. Ray, thanks for calling Court Radio, and have a great Sunday and good luck with your claim.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Folks, we're running out of time. If you've been listening to Court Radio and you enjoy it, you can always check us out online at courtradio.com. And if you have a legal question, you call us during the week at 215-227-2727. All right, we're going to station break, and following that, you've got the big guy, E. Stephen Collins, and Philly Speaks.
94-95 was the lockout, by the way.
Thank you, David.
That was the lockout. That was the correct answer.
Have a great week,
boom,
folks.
Boom. See ya.
Your loved one is getting medical care, and someone makes a tragic mistake. Now they'll need round-the-clock care or worse, and you're left alone. I'm Dean Weitzman of My Philly Lawyer. Call us at 215-227-2727. For more than 30 years, My Philly Lawyer has been holding hospitals and insurance companies accountable for medical mistakes. Call My Philly Lawyer at 215-227-2727. My Philly Lawyer, when winning matters most.
If you've been injured, the road to recovery can seem long. At United Therapy Centers, we're here to help. Call us 877-510-7764. With leading-edge technology and our team approach, we provide the highest level of patient care with a pain management program developed just for you. If you've been injured, we can help. Call United Therapy Centers toll-free 877-510-7764. United Therapy Centers, get on the road to recovery.
Are you in a financial legal squeeze? Unable to work because of an accident with your legal case still not settled? Lawsuit Funding Solutions can help you pay the bills while you wait. If you have a pending lawsuit, call 877-697-7352. It can take time for a lawsuit to settle. Lawsuit Funding Solutions is here to help you get back on track. And you won't owe them a thing if your case doesn't settle or you don't receive judgment. Get out of the squeeze today. Call 877-697-7352.
If you've been injured on the job and are entitled to workers' comp, you need someone fighting for you from the start. Call Jeffrey Gross, attorney at law. Don't rely on your employer or insurance company to get it right. Call 215-512-1500. If you're entitled to workers' comp or it's being challenged, Jeffrey Gross can help get the money you deserve, and he won't get paid unless you get paid. Call 215-512-1500. Jeffrey Gross, attorney at law, representing Pennsylvania's injured workers for more than 20 years.